Hey yo, and here we go. Another episode of We Talk Music is on the air and in your ear. And I am Mo, and once again, it's with me, the man with the silver tongue. Brett is Mr. Brett Podcast, the king of the casters. He's my co-host, but he's not my special guest. Luckily, we can do better than him. So, Brett, who do we have?
Well, you've totally done better than me. There is no doubt about that. This is a fellow who's been in the music industry for a long time, and the reason that we have him on the show is because his LA Guns have a new album coming out. He is Kelly Nichols. Kelly, how are you?
Hey, fellas, what's going on?
Well, we are happy to be talking to you. I mean, we've been fans of yours for a long time, big fans of LA Guns and stuff, and so, you know, really happy to have you on the show to be able to talk about your new, well, I mean, at least the new single. We haven't heard the new album yet, but Renegades, awesome title, I'll say.
Thanks. Yeah, appreciate that. Thanks. The album is done. It's mixed, mastered. Artwork has been done. And we just released Crawl from it, and there's 9 more tracks on it, and most of them are rockers. And we're looking forward to getting it out. We don't have a release date yet, an actual release date, so we're still waiting on that, just kind of watching what the world's doing. And we're probably going to release another single before we do release the album. That's where we're headed now. We've been talking about it and trying to do a video and see how we can coordinate that. And everybody's got to travel. We're all in different states at this point. So, lots going on, and just kind of hanging and waiting and seeing what's up.
Yeah, I guess so, right? I mean, there's no rule book for this kind of situation, so we all just have to play it by ear.
We're all just winging it.
So, sorry, it's my philosophy on life. I'm just winging it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you're good at it. So I'm interested. You know, I mean, we've listening to the single. I mean, it's really good, and it sounds a lot like classic
Thank
LA
you.
Guns.
Yeah, I agree. I think so too. I think it definitely has. You know, we stayed in our wheelhouse. You know, we didn't go. We didn't become a speed metal or a death metal band or anything. You know, we tried to stay to what we are, just a hard rocking band. And I think it's got a good, good edgy, raw punk feel to the whole thing. So, and it was a lot of fun to do. So, yeah, we're excited about it. Can't wait.
You know, I mean, I know you guys obviously on tour, you perform the classic, the classics from LA Guns. But yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting thing, because when we hear an album's coming out, it's like, okay, is this going to sound like classic LA Guns? Especially since, quite frankly, the other LA Guns, their music lately has been sounding not so much like the classic LA Guns. Hey, I have no problem with anybody evolving and changing and having a different sound, but we were curious, and you just nailed it, at least from what we've heard on Crawl and such.
Yeah, thanks. I think that, I don't know if we like really deliberately tried to, but we knew we know what we are. So let's just keep that. But a lot of rockers, there's like 2 slow songs on there. There's a couple ballads, but mostly the other 8 are full blown. So we wanted to rock, we didn't want to come out with a mid-tempo record or just kind of wanted to sound fresh. And so I think with the mixture of the 2 new guys, that it really rounded everything out. So it does, I feel like it's rooted in what it was, but it has a twist on it now,
now let's maybe talk about the band a little bit. We know Steve. I mean, you've known Steve for years, but I mean, you got Scotty and Kurt and stuff like that. So, how does that vibe work now, especially in comparison to, to previous?
This vibe works amazingly well. They're super nice guys, and they're really easy to work with. But I'll say this, that, back then in the day, too, it worked really well, too. It was like, we really all got along and never really had any issues till, recently. I thought we always, had the same vision and the same goals and the same aspirations. And we were pretty focused for a long time. And I think that, we all split things equally. We always split the publishing and all that stuff and the credit and everything equally. So everybody contributed, everybody, put in as much as they could, because we all had a vested interest in it. So, we didn't let just one person run anything. We all we were all there for the meetings and all that stuff. And so, you know, but it was fun too back then. So, it was a good time too, but it's a great time now as well. I feel like it was easier to collaborate on this record. You know, usually I would do my pre-production and, do my bass lines and kind of split, bop around a little bit, but mostly like split. But this time, stayed in for the whole process, and we had like a, really a crunch of 7 days. We had 2 days of rehearsal before, and I hadn't, we hadn't seen each other in months. So we got 10 new songs to learn and fine tune those a little bit, put in a little few pieces here and there as we were doing it. But everybody was very open to the whole process and just had fun with it. So it was a blast, really. But it was always good,
Yeah. Yeah, well, and music's supposed to be fun, right? I mean, I know it's a job.
It's like, it's to help you get through the day, for a minute,
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be fun, and, yeah.
So, I mean, one of the things, like, with the new song, geez, I keep wanting to call it the wrong word. It's terrible, because it's like I feel like creep. I want to say creep, but I know it's crawl. So it's like it's bad in that regard. And I'm like, no, that's a totally different song from a totally different band. But like one thing I note is that you have a really nice bass line on this, and certainly a little bit of a bass solo for yourself even.
Thanks. Just kind of ended up like, I wrote the song, and when I went to save it, I had to name it something, and I just felt like it was crawling. So I just called it Crawl, and then did a melody and the lyrics around it. But the bass solo kind of part just kind of fit in right there. And I think that, maybe live we could do something, it would be a good spot to expand it a little bit or do something there. But it was, it just kind of felt right for the part. And that's, so there's no lead solo in that song, and we never even thought about it, but it was the slow grinding, man. It was crawl. It's just, you crawl all the way. I don't know.
Now, one of the things I had read that you had talked about some of the classic songs and how Magdalene and Over the Edge were your favorites just for the energy. So I'm wondering, like, when it came to creating the songs for this album, were you looking at that to kind of like bring the same kind of energy?
I definitely wanted the record to have energy. I definitely wanted the record to sound fresh and upbeat and moving and fun and so everybody just kind of brought in their best rockers, and then it was definitely didn't want to do it like an old man sounding record, definitely wanted it to move and have energy and songs that are fun to play, that would be fun to play live, and some different kind of guitar melodies and stuff. And so there's some weird tracks on it, so it's cool. There's some cool stuff on it, really cool.
So you guys feel any pressure putting out an album? Obviously, it's been a while since we've heard something from you in the studio, and it's really this iteration of LA Guns. It's like your first studio album. So is there any pressure that you guys are feeling?
Well, when we got the record deal, they wanted to do the record right away. And, since we are all living in four different states, it was like, how are we going to do this? So everybody just kind of brought in what they had or what they wrote. So we had a couple of months to write and get it together. So it's, I was really afraid of like, okay, you got a record deal. That's great. But it doesn't mean I want to put out a crappy record. I want to make sure that we can do it right before we say yes, that we'll do it. So we started like sending each other songs and stuff. And as soon as I heard like, some of Kurt's stuff, I knew that we were going to be all right. So I wrote three, Steve wrote a couple, Scott wrote a couple, and we just kind of took, the best out of what we had in the time frame to be able to make it happen. But I'm super happy with it. Like I'm really, really excited about it, because I do think that we pulled it off. As far as I'm concerned, I think we pulled it off. Like I'm proud of it. I'm not hiding behind it. I'm right in front of it. I feel like it's a really good effort for the whole situation, you know? So, but you guys let me know what you think later on.
Well, we can't wait, honestly. I mean, it's a teaser, right? What we've heard, but it bodes well for what we can, you know, what we're expecting. Like it really has us excited.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. Again, I feel like it's in the vein of where it should be, you know, it really shouldn't be much different than that. So, you know, from start to end, it just moves. And, you know, the engineer guy was great and we just crunched it out. So, you know, to do a record in 7 days, I mean, he used to have months of pre-production and you'd have, you know, months in the studio. You know, you could do 3 months of pre-production writing and recording the record till you were like so sick of it by the time you got into the studio. So, but those days are gone, you know, those budgets are gone and everything like that. So today, you know, you don't get like hundreds of thousands of dollars to do a record anymore. You got to really just kind of guerrilla warfare it out, but the technology is there. So, you know, we could swap songs through the internet and, you know, with good communication, we were able to, you know, pull it off. So.
So I'm interested. Like, I mean, obviously you were there, like, right in the early days of the Sunset Strip. So I mean, how is it that, like, creating a band and, like, kind of, you know, doing it guerrilla style nowadays? How does that compare to, like, the guerrilla style of 1981? Besides the fact that we didn't have the internet back then.
Well, it's, you know, I think the guerrilla style of back then was that we had no money. We were, you know, literally slept in abandoned buildings down by the beach, slept in cars, and just, you know, trying to survive till you got a record deal. It was, you know, sometimes you had a job, but not really, you know, so we were just really all kind of starving and everything. And, you know, Tracy and I cooked a pot of mac and cheese, Kraft mac and cheese one day, and we cooked it so much that the pot cracked and we ate it off the floor. I mean, it was, you know, we were young and it's like, you're lucky to have an instrument. So it was really, we were really hungry back then. But then, you know, the economy was good. So the budgets were good. So once you got signed, you were like, all right, I can breathe now. You know, I can relax for a minute. I mean, I combed the parking lot of a 7-Eleven once looking for a nickel so I could buy a bag of Top Ramen. I mean, and so I didn't eat Top Ramen for a long time after that. Yeah. Just because it was like,
yeah, bad.
But, you know, those days were different than these days. We're a little more comfortable and, you know, but so it's like you still want to do it and you have to just be realistic of what the situation is, what the times are, you know. People like Beyonce and people like rap. And so rock is not right now, you know, it's always there, but it's not like the main form of music, I think, that pop culture is listening to. You know, every time somebody pulls up next to me, it's Travis Scott or, you know, something. Like, I never hear Rammstein or anything. So, but, you know, the people are still there and they come out and they enjoy it. You know, it was the music of a certain generation in a certain time period in history. And, you know, if it was your music when you were at that right age and it meant something to you, you know, you still listen to it most likely. So, you know, we just do it, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, the main thing is just to get, you know, to be able to do a music and put a new song out. It's like, I've, you know, written a song in 25 years and that's the first song I wrote in 25 years, Carl. And now it's on the radio and we're talking about it and it's crazy. It's a great feeling to, you know, and people are happy and they like it. And it's like, you know, great to hear that kind of thing. That's why you do it, to make people happy and have a good time and enjoy a piece of music that, you know, can mean something to you or something. So you got to do what you got to do. You know, there's no more, you know, head cases being an ego, you know, and all that. It's like, if you want to do it, you have to just do it. So, and, you know, you feel blessed doing it at any point. It's a gift to be able to, you know, release a song into the universe. It's crazy.
You know, it's funny, actually, you know, I'm just thinking back about how incredibly loyal the fans are of that genre of music, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Like that's good. Yeah. I mean, you must see incredible examples of that when you're out, you know, touring and doing all this different stuff.
Yeah, it's you know, it's kind of the same it's kind of always been the same because those are the people that like it. So they've always been coming out, you know, if they're still into it, they're still coming out. And, you know, I was talking to a guy yesterday or a podcast I did the other day. And the guy said that he met me when he was 13 and I gave him a guitar pick and he still has it. And you know, it's like 35 years ago, you know, so it's, you know, it's definitely worth doing because, you know, the people are out there and they want to hear music and everybody listens to all kinds of things today. So it's cool.
Yeah.
You do. I'm just upset you do other podcasts. I don't know. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I thought it was a cooking show.
Well, it's funny, Kelly, because I have a signed piece of paper from way back during a mall signing that you guys did right after around Cocked and Loaded. It was so awesome.
See what I mean? It's like a lot of that. So it's, you know, grateful to have it, man. Grateful to be able to do it and to you know, go out there and meet people and play and stuff like that. So, you know, it was always fun. It was always an amazing gift and thing to be able to do, to make, you know, a living playing music was great. It's great.
What an interesting thing, you know, when I think about it now, especially like the idea of doing a mall signing. And I mean, do those things even happen anymore?
I don't know, you know, a mall signing, you know, that would probably be like a record store or something that, you know, if there's a record store in the mall still that does that, you know, but back then, yeah, every mall had a record store. So I think we did quite a few of those, you know, but today, I don't know, you know, usually do the meet and greet at the show and stuff like that, you know, before and afters kind of thing sometimes. So, you know, Tower Records, I don't know.
So that, what can fans expect when, you know, eventually they are able to see LA Guns actually out on the road?
Well, you know, they're going to see a tight, solid show, man, with a lot of the old stuff. And we're going to start filtering in the new stuff as the record comes out. And we can, you know, figure out which way, work the set the best way to have a bit of the old stuff and the new stuff and, you know, start bringing it together, you know. There's a lot to choose from, so it's good. You know, there's a lot of good songs to choose from. So, and then love to play some of the new ones too. You know, so.
Well, and it's interesting, right? Because I mean, before the M3, I mean, like, what was it like to get on stage and just kind of be in that moment where it's just like it's kind of brand new and you don't necessarily have much together, but it's just like it's a new moment.
Well, that was the first time I've been on stage in like 25 years. And we did a shot of whiskey right behind the drum set right before we went on. And I took a deep breath. And, you know, luckily, I'm not the front man, so I can just hang and play the bass. And it was, you know, it was pretty easy. I mean, I think I did so much of it. I don't know if I was like more nervous like the day before than the actual show, because I feel like confident. You know, I didn't smoke any weed before I went on the show because I didn't want to, you know, the starts and the stops, since we don't get to rehearse much, like the starts and the stops are really important. So I just, you know, I didn't want to like mess any of those parts up. So I went on straight as I could to concentrate and, you know, to do it, because a lot was kind of riding on me, because I'm sure, like, you know, if, like, I think we did a good job, but I think if we'd have really like butchered it, you know, it would have been over. You know, we would have just been destroyed and, you know, no record deal or no, you know, our management now, too, the guys who run M3, New Breed, they're our management company. So, you know, thank God it went well, but it was a lot riding on it. You know, it's like that was the first live show we ever did together. And that was the fourth time that I ever met the singer, Kurt. So, because the first show was M3 in front of thousands of people, you know, in a little club or something, you know, Moe's Crab Shack or something, you know.
Did you give him any special, you know, personal message or before, like, don't screw this up or anything like that before he got out there?
You know, we thought, you know, definitely thought to myself, don't fuck this up. Man, I don't want to be the one that fucks this up. Let's put it this way, you know. So, and then you never know, because we didn't get a sound check, so you don't know, like, you know, how well you're going to be able to hear everything and the monitors or whatever. And, you know, you just really got to know the song 100% through and through. You got to know that song in your sleep. So we all practiced really hard. And, you know, no sound check, first show, M3. I think it went okay.
Yeah, clearly something went right. So, you know,
thank you.
Is this maybe a chance for you and Steve to just kind of get some credit that you maybe haven't gotten in the past for the band's success? You know, and people can see that you guys are, your contributions because you're getting to do your own thing?
I don't know if anybody, but that one person thinks that we didn't contribute, but I think I know what you're talking about. But if you don't think Bill Wyman and Charlie Watts contributed to the sound of the Stones, and it's a band, so what makes a band work is because it works. So everybody's important. When you take somebody out of the band, it's different. But when the unit becomes successful, like when the band does well, that's because the band is, everybody's in there, you know, that's why it works. And that's why you're successful, because everything worked, all pistons were bumping, you know? So I don't really need the credit. I don't really, care about the credit. I really just want to have a good day and have fun and play some rock and roll. And I don't get caught up in what kind of amps I got and all that stuff. I just like music, and I just like playing music. So I don't, it's not for that.
Well, and it's great, hearing you talk about writing your first song in 25 years and getting on stage for the first time. I mean, it's just, I think people just don't necessarily think about that. But I mean, also you've got the Montauk Salvage Company. So maybe talk about that for a bit for us.
Montauk Salvage Company is just a side project I got with my friend, who's an incredible artist. So we would go out and find stuff, and we reclaim and resalvage it, reuse it, and then we do graphics for computer graphics. I've always been into photography and stuff. So do some of that and do a little bit of merchandise for that stuff. And it's just our little graphics design company. I've been doing graphics since 1993, and just a good way for me to still be creative when I felt the band was kind of on its last leg, or just like my time had come. I started getting into computer graphics and just wanted to find a way to stay creative and always love photography and motorcycle racing and all that kind of stuff. So it goes pretty well. So we do some cool stuff. So.
Well, I see as well, lots of road trips. I mean, talk about, that looks like a lot of fun to me. Just the idea of being able to do these massive road trips and just head on a motorcycle and just get going.
We did like almost 7,000 miles in 16 days from Montauk, New York to Sturgis, South Dakota, down Wyoming, Colorado, New Mexico, came back up the loop. And it was just incredible trip, man. I highly recommend it. We didn't tow them to Sturgis. We rode them. and I got a flat tire 80 miles from home. So that took another 2 days for me to get home. So that was a bummer.
Oh, jeez. Wow.
I got a flat on a Sunday night, 80 miles from home. And I was just like, oh, man, a Sunday night, dude. Everything's closed. No one's around. I have hardly roadside assistance. They couldn't help me. The guy at the gas station was going to let me sleep in one of the garage bays, but I had to get out of there by seven in the morning. And I was like going to sleep outside with it. Finally got a tow. Great trip with my best friend, Mike Pont. And he's got the same bike kind of, and we just cruised around the country and just kind of, it's a beautiful country, man. It is an absolutely stunning country, America. This is the most amazing, beautiful stuff. It's a beautiful world, man.
So then I guess it's interesting. You've toured like that. And of course you've toured with a band. So, do you have a favorite? Do you need to have a favorite, or are both like just amazing in their own way?
No, both are amazing. I think that traveling in a band, it's more about the people than the scenery or the town, because you don't really get to spend much time or see much time in most places. It depends if you're overnight or if you're leaving right after the show and you're going somewhere else and you check in at like 4 a.m. and you wake up, you go right to the show. We were like 20 miles from Abraham Lincoln's birth house one time and didn't have time to go see it. So we, you know, So it's different. It's more about the people and stuff like that. But, you know, when you're traveling on a motorcycle, it's just, you know, the beauty and the scenery is just, you know, incredible.
How does that work then? I guess, like, I mean, I saw some of your kits. So were you taking, like, were you just staying out, like, camping kind of thing along the way?
No, my friend didn't want to camp, really, because we drove so much that we were doing, like, averaging 400 miles a day. So we drove so much that we really needed the bed at this age, you know? we needed a couple of beds and either AC or heat, you know? We tried not to shower, so we took 2 showers in 16 days. And you were allowed to brush your teeth. So that was it. But you couldn't shower, and you couldn't change your shirt and your, I think, you could change your socks and underwear. So we only changed twice in 16 days. But and I ended up winning because after I put my bike on the tow truck after the flat tire, I was filthy. And my friend looks at me and he goes, "You win."
That's interesting because Brett tries also not to shower. But
yeah.
Yeah. Just as a general rule.
It's so overrated, yeah. Man.
Yeah, it's overrated.
Yeah, I shower personally. I shower once a month, whether I need it or not.
Exactly.
Yeah. Gotta pace yourself.
I don't want to waste water, especially in the apocalypse, right? Yeah. I've heard water is important, and toilet paper, right? So, I mean, it's...
Yeah, share a square.
Yeah.
That was the best.
So the
but you don't want to
go ahead, Brett.
You don't want angry people out there without toilet paper either. Coming
no, oh, yeah. No, man, no. So absolutely not.
Make sure we all got some.
You know. So I'm interested in Sturgis because we just talked to Ron Keel, and I know he does a lot, plays Sturgis a lot. So are there a lot of you know, people, you know, in the music industry that wind up going to Sturgis that you know, say?
Yeah, well, I'm sure. Last year the year we went 2017 I went, and it was Ozzy was playing, so there's a lot of rock bands, you know, there's definitely a rock oriented crowd, bikers and stuff, so Poison, stuff like that. I'm sure a lot of bands play. I would love to personally play there, you know, because I'd go hang out there, I'd ride there, or I'd hang there for a few days and rent a bike or something if I could. But you know, the Sturgis is just like one town, you know, there's towns all around. So Deadwood and, you know, you can go up to the Devil's Tower. I went to, there's like, you know, so Sturgis is like a good base, but, there's other towns that are around there. You have to take these mountain roads to get to them, you know, pulling into Deadwood is just like so cool. You understand why it was like a little town there. Cause it was such a beautiful spot on the base of these mountains and, you know, it's gorgeous. So, you know, then the ride there is all, you know, pine trees and rivers, and you're just like, it's stunning. So, but yeah, there's a lot around there. But yeah, it's definitely a rock, you know, it's a rock world for sure. It's bikers and, you know, tattoo artists, and everybody's, you know, it's a rocking world, I would say.
Did you have something, Mel, that you were going
to ask? Yeah, well, I'm sorry, I wasn't sure if you were done yet there.
Yes,
Brett.
Yes, I'm done.
No, I just got back to the album, because, you know.
Interesting idea.
Yeah, what a concept. Yeah, yeah. No, just, we're, you know, kind of, can you explain to me kind of the songwriting for this project compared to what the songwriting was like back in the day for LA Guns?
I don't know if the actual process for me personally is much different. It's like I need like a time frame. Like I need to know that I have to have this song done by a certain time. And I think that really helps me finish it because I always come up with little bits, but to finish a whole song is really tricky, you know, to do the whole thing. So when I have a time crunch that I know that, like, you know, these have to be in, that really helps me to figure out all the parts that I want to put in there and do it. So usually I just start by jamming, you know, I just plug the guitar in and, you know, I may take a hit of the baba and then put my headphones on and just crank it. I get the most distorted sound I could get. And when it sounds nice and fat, and I just start like playing along. And then, you know, when I feel like I found something, I'll just kind of, record it. And then, maybe I'll stick with it or I'll put it away and go back to it later and try to see where it wants to go. You know, I kind of want to let the song tell me where it wants to go. That's what I try to figure out. It's like, where does this song want to go from here? You know, what flows naturally? What's the right change and the tempo and the vibe of it? So, you know, just try to come up with a riff at first, and then, you know, if you like the riff enough to keep building on it and stuff. So, yeah, I wrote three of these, and, you know, I probably have a few more that are ready to go, too. So I kind of really felt inspired. But, you know, again, knowing that, you know, we were going to have to go to the studio, I have to get him to Kurt so he can start. I taped my melodies. I hummed like my melodies and sent them to him so he could start to get the idea of what I'm thinking and stuff. So, you know, but it's you just got to try to relax and knowing that, listen, you know, just do the best you can, you know, just try to write what you can and try to, you know, what are you trying to say? What kind of vibe, what kind of groove, what kind of energy are you trying to put out? You know? So I think the three I wrote were pretty upbeat because I wanted to make sure that we had, you know, good moving, crunchy, good moving, rhythmic, melodic, you know, stuff. That's kind of it.
Now, when it comes to, you know, it, and especially when it comes to Steve, like, I mean, do you guys have like a shorthand when you're working together that you just kind of understand? I mean, we talk a lot about the pocket and stuff like that, you know, and the bassist and the drummer. So like having that relationship, do you find that helps?
Yeah. Steve and I have always gotten along super well. And it's always just been easy to play with him because he's so solid and straight and that I can just, you know, the pocket is always right there. And I've worked a lot on my rhythm and making sure that, you know, I'm in the groove. But I think we've always been pretty much in the groove. I think I'm a better bass player now than I was back then because I've still been playing through the years and stuff. So, you know, and then going back and playing now with Steve was fun because we started doing a little funk and a little blues and stuff and, you know, jamming a little bit, just trying to let loose. But he's an easy guy to play with because it's so solid. And, you know, for a drummer, that's, you know, priority number one, you know, to be in time, solid, steady, you know. So we just lock in. And I think, you know, if it's good, it's been a pleasure, you know, having him as the backbeat there, you know.
Now,
and we get along so well, so yeah, it helps too.
Yeah, for sure. Do you have any funny stories of Steve?
Yeah, because we got him on next week. Is there anything we should?
Yeah.
We got him on next week. Is there anything we should
bring up? Because we'll ask him if he has funny stories about you.
Oh yeah, we're gonna give him the chance to talk shit about you. So you might as well.
You can ask him about the. I used to put like women's panties. He would always bring a bag to rehearsal with an extra shirt and a towel and, you know, a drink and a Snickers bar or something, you know, to rehearsal. And he would always have a bag with him. So I would stick like women's panties and underwears that we had accumulated and I would stick them in the bag. So when he got home and his wife went through the bag, you know, there would be like a straight pair of ladies' underwear in there and just to try to give him shit. So you can ask him about that.
Perfect. And you guys collected women's underwear. I wonder how that happened.
Well, we didn't, you know, but the crew guys did.
Oh yeah.
I blame,
yeah.
I blame everything on the crew.
That's good to me.
Rule number one. Blame it on the crew. But, you know, we had a lot of good times and stuff. Steve was a great guy to hang out with and party with. And, you know, just every night, you know, it was a blast. But that one sticks out.
That's awesome. One of the other things I'm interested in is when you did start, like, way back on the Sunset Strip, I mean, it's like doing lighting and roadie and stuff like that. What, you know... You know, that you wanted to be in a band, I'm assuming. So, like, how long did it just take a little bit of time to find the right band?
Well, I actually started roadieing and stuff on the East Coast.
Okay.
We had a top 40 band here on the East Coast, and we would play about, you know, average five nights a week. And so I had been playing before that. I had a little band with my brother, and we had a friend with a drum kit in a basement, so we did a few shows like that, and then I stopped playing when I roadied, and then when the roadieing was over, I got back into it, you know, and then came out to L.A. in 84 for a two-week trip with my friend, the same guy I took the motorcycle trip with, Mike Pont. And we came out in 84. We stayed for 2 weeks. We ended up getting a limousine ride back to the airport. So I fell in love with California. And it took me 2 years. I came back out in 86. I went home and settled my stuff and did what I had to do and came back, moved out to L.A. in 86. So it was like kind of just right time for the scene was just happening and, you know, big hair and everybody was out, everybody was partying, you know, there were no terrorists, there was no disease, everything. I mean, there was diseases, but, you know, not like this. And so there was, or viruses or whatever, you know, but there was, you know, there was a good economy and it was the mid-80s and, you know, it was good. It was a good place in the world. You could go out and you felt safe and you were just having a good time and, you know, people were in a good mood and it wasn't anything about anything serious. It was, you know, so it was just a fun time to experience that, you know.
Then maybe, you know, talk about some of the, like you've talked about a lot of the people and a lot of the friends. So maybe just talk a little bit about some of the people that you've met and how those experiences have kind of, you know, helped shape your career and kind of and what they mean to your career.
Well, you know, the people you met, I mean, I probably don't talk to 99% of them anymore because Hollywood's like that, you know, nobody stays there. Not too many people stay there forever, man. People come and go so fast around here. Right, The Wizard of Oz. Okay, so it was more of, because people were in a good mood. I mean, you know, people were into doing things. You know, a lot of bands were going around, and there was a good vibe going. There was a good music scene. There was a healthy scene. So, you know, that was kind of it. We were just, you know, waiting and hoping that, you know, working on stuff and trying to get songs out and hoping, you know, that we could get a deal. Like when, you know, when this band got signed and that band got signed, you were like, you know, oh, man, you know, we want to be part of this wave right now. So we, you know, we got lucky to get in there. And, but, you know, it was rough. I mean, there was no money back then. And, you know, you're just taking a chance. You know, most of my friends were off to college and stuff. And I went to L.A. and sleep on couches and, you know, down by the beach. And like I said, and empty buildings and, you know, no money. And, you know, so you had to really want it, you know, back then. Mm-hmm. Well, I think you still do. But, you know, you can go on American Idol and, you know, you'd be a millionaire at the end of the month if you do well, you know. With that scene, you're just taking a chance, you know. Everybody was just taking a chance. You were hoping that the band stayed together. You were hoping that the singer was good. That, you know, there's a lot of factors into making it happen. And, you know, just got to hope that this is the one that stays together and, you know, this is the one that can do something and this is the one that has potential. And but definitely went through a bunch of bands, you know, in the process, you know, taking two bases on the A train uptown, you know, going through Madison Square Garden underneath at Penn Station, going to Alphabet City and going on auditions. And, you know, it was a long road. You know, but you gotta have faith, and you know, you gotta really, really want it, and really believe that you got what it takes to get there. And you know, luckily enough, and you know, we're very blessed to have gotten as far as we got, and you know, to still be talking about it, you know, 30-something years later, is pretty crazy.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt it must be really hard to believe in that regard. I mean, I'm thinking that when you guys released the, you know, just after you joined LA Guns, to think that here you'd be performing with LA Guns in some regard, that and having a new album, I mean, you know, incredible, because so many bands don't get that kind of legacy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I thought, you know, 2 years, I'm like, I thought when we got the record deal, my first thought was I can eat and I don't have to worry about it for 2 years. I could probably eat for 2 years. That was my thought. You know, and luckily it was, you know, we got a few years out of it and stuff. So I did almost 10 years and it's solid. So it was a lot of work and, you know, it was just an amazing experience. So to be able to do it again at this age is incredible, because the timing was right. My daughter's off to college, or she, you know, she was before this. And then, you know, I had the time to get back in it. And, you know, well, of course, I'd love to you know, get up and play and meet everybody and hang out, have a good time and have some fun, get out of the house and do something, you know.
Now, one of the things that I will say is that one of my favorite songs off of the LA Guns discography is Nothing Better to Do. So I do thank you for
that.
Oh,
man. You bastard. Well, Nothing Better to Do was like an accident, you know, should have never happened. I had written the music for it, and then we were in the studio, and everybody went to dinner, and I stayed with the engineer, and I had a couple of beers, and I said, I'm going to just lay down a guide vocal for Phil, so when he gets back, he'll have an idea of the melody I'm thinking about and stuff. So I wrote the lyrics down like really fast, just like started humming it. I had to play it back for me a couple of times, and I just started humming it. I wrote down the lyrics, and I recorded it in one take or two takes at the most. And when Phil came back from dinner, thinking about it, I was like, hey, but you know, while you were gone, I laid down a vocal track for Nothing Better to Do, and you know, have a listen, and then you can, you know, you can do your thing on it. So after he heard it, he's like, oh man, it's done, mate. I'm not touching it. And I'm like, what? I was like, you bastard. You know, so he was like, that's it, it's done. And I'm like, you know, I never intended to sing on a song, to sing a song on a record at all, you know. But he thought that it was what it was, and he didn't want to touch it. So that's it. It came out, you know. And then, I mean, the lyrics are just like ramblings off the top of my head. It's the stuff that rhymed or whatever, trying to fill in the story. I couldn't even break it out into detail or, you know, change it much because there was no time left. And so it just, it is what it is.
Well, I mean, I love it because to me, it's just so raw and real and just, you know, it's got that punk vibe to it. And the thing is, for right. me, like, I love the fact that when a band has somebody who, you know, isn't necessarily the lead singer, maybe like you, doesn't really have an interest in singing and just does it. And it's just like, it's just a different vibe. And I dig that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys dropped out.
Yeah, I was like, oops. All right. Did you have something you wanted to say, Mo?
No. I was just wondering, you know, you know, you were talking about how much you like it when it's nice to hear somebody's different voice sometimes on an album, because it just gives that album a little bit of a different flavor, you know, keeps things fresh.
Yeah, I had no choice. So he wouldn't do it again. So, you know, but yeah, I get it. It's cool. But, you know, you put yourself out there, man. So, you know, if you don't want it out there, don't take the picture. Don't record it. Don't, you know. And I recorded it, and he came back, and he was like, what's next after, you know? Oh. So, but it's fun. We do it live. I did it at M3, so, you know, gives Kurt a break and stuff. So, you know, it's a good little blues. I think Kurt does all the lead guitar on it during the show, and he killed it. So, you know, we'll throw it in there, man. I'll do it. It is what it is.
But do you have any favorite songs from the discography besides that one?
I'm sorry?
Have any favorite songs from the LA Guns discography besides that one?
Well, I would say I thought Magdalene was one of my favorites. Over the Edge is one of my favorites. Crystallize is one of my favorites. Bella Jane. And, you know, I like most of them. And we picked from only the records that I played on, really, the first three. And then, you know, we'll add some new stuff. So it's all right.
Crystallize is the one that, for me, I'm like, I thought that was the song that was going to take you guys to the next, because it's a great song. Like,
man, that's such a beautiful song. I
mean, so
like, what happened?
Amazing.
Yeah, what happened?
I don't know. I thought it was
going to be fantastic. It's beautiful. The lyrics are good. It's like, it's unique. I thought too. Every time I hear it, I'm like, I can't believe that song didn't do better than it did. But it's a beautiful song.
Yeah, it seemed like the one that you just I don't know. That should have been the one that just took you to that level of the biggest in the business. That song, because it's got such a, like you say, it's beautiful, and it's,
yeah,
and it's very, I don't know, it's unique, and it's different. It's genuine, It's, you know, so heartfelt. So it's, it's just a beautiful song. It should have been your, you know, your sweet child of mine, that type of thing, right?
Yeah, something like that. One of those, you know, a little bit. I don't know, man. Tried, man.
Oh, I know. Yeah. In fact, didn't you guys put it on a couple albums to try and get it to, you know, some more visibility?
I don't know.
It's it's on Vicious Circle as well as Hollywood Vampires. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. I'm just a bass player. I don't know anything. Leave me out of it. but I agree, it's a beautiful song. Yeah, one of my favorites too. Just really an underrated song, I thought.
Awesome. Yeah.
All right, well, Brett, do you have anything else? He's given us quite a bit of his time here.
Absolutely,
so.
Absolutely no, Kelly. Sure. I mean, we totally appreciate you coming on. We want to give you the chance to tell all the fans where they can find LA Guns, since you don't know when they can find LA Guns per se.
You can check out our website. I run our website, which is laguns.net. We have a bunch of merch, and all the latest news goes there first before Facebook. Like, as soon as I hear about it, I post it on our website. So, you know, you can check that out. And, you know, we, like I said, we'll probably release another single first before the album, but anything can happen. So we're just, you know, watching the weather and seeing what goes on. We have dates that have been rescheduled for August, which, you know, we'll have to see how that goes. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's safe and it's possible and it's safe and everybody can do it, then, you know, we definitely are ready and look forward to going out on tour and playing and meeting everybody and having a good time and bringing the party to your town. But we're all just going to watch and make sure that it's cool for that. So, you know, we're playing it by ear. Any of the latest news, LAGuns.net, and Facebook, we have a page there too. So
awesome.
And you know, you guys stay safe. Thanks for your time, and I appreciate it, man. And let me know when this goes, and I'll post it on the page as well on our website too. So I hope you guys get it out there.
Oh yeah, for sure. Well, Kelly Nichols, thanks. Thank you so much. Great song, Crawl, and really look forward to hearing the whole album, and we wish you nothing but the best for the future and for the album.
Yeah, best of success to you, Brett, for sure.
Thank you, Brett and Mo. Thank you so much, you guys. Stay safe and keep rocking out there. You know, we appreciate what you're doing too, man, keeping it alive. So thanks so much.
Awesome. Well, thank you, and hopefully we'll see you live.
And remember, no other podcasts in the future unless it's about food.
you got it, boss. Yes, boss. Okay, man, take care.
All right, you too. Thanks, Kelly. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Chocolate and I'm hypnotized. You got it all wrapped up like sugar and spice. Night will come and she will take it all. But everything about you makes me crawl. Yeah. Fingers like the high command, just a cat in a rock and roll band. Icy cold with the jet black sand.